Check, check, check. All right, I'm going to give you some volume there, Seb, so people can hear you. But if you're bad,
they can hear me chewing my pizza.
I'm going to turn down your microphone. You know what? This is, what is this, as you lick your fingers? Gosh, man, you're falling apart on
people
me.
People were not watching. They didn't need to know that.
No, and I'm not going to edit this out either. People are getting to see the real Sebastian Bourdais.
Oh, my
just
God.
Wolfing down pizza, licking his fingers. You're an animal, Bourdais.
The guy who just left the meeting at 11 from St. Pete and just showed up with the RV at 2-something.
I thought you guys from Lamar are cultured. Now I'm feeling a little more comfortable here. I'm not as much of a country bumpkin. All right, well, we should tell them this is a live edition of the week in IndyCar podcast on the Marshall Pruitt podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and our dear friends at the Justice Brothers. And presented by a very fast Sebastian Bourdais driving to get over here on a Wednesday at the Rolex 24. So I would love to tell folks that I had this masterful plan of inviting you onto the show this week on Wednesday, knowing that just 2 hours ago there was an official announcement that went out with from the team, your Dale Coyne Racing with Vassar Sullivan, multi-year, et cetera, et cetera. It just kind of worked out that way. I didn't know in advance, but it looks like I'm really smart and lined all that up. Were you impressed, or did you think how he must know? Wednesday's the day. That's why he's having me on.
I knew. I'm just surprised you didn't.
You think I'm switched on. I'm not. This is. We've established this fact. All right. Well, we don't have as much time as we would like, unfortunately. Some Juan Montoya guy is showing up in about under an hour, and he's a little bit forceful. So you know what?
He's going to bust through the door.
Well, yeah, and a friend of mine, when we were out earlier, and IMSA was doing the group shot with all the cars, and Bib, the Michelin man up front, was posing for the photo as well, and I did have a friend of mine say, oh, how nice, they invited Montoya. And I'm not one to speak, but whew,
I didn't say anything.
Connie has been, there's some fine cooking going on in the Montoya household, that's all I'm saying. All right, now that we have thrown Montoya under the bus for no particular reason.
The good thing is he's not going to hear about this one until after the fact.
He doesn't listen to anything that I do. He doesn't even know what we're doing when he shows up. It's even better. Well, let's, my friend, get to as many questions as we can in the time that we have allotted. Let's see. Where would you like to start?
I don't know. I haven't read anything, brother.
So. Well, I've read some, but I figured this is the part where we just kind of look through here. And
yeah, I was looking on Twitter. You were looking on Facebook.
Well, we'll switch back and forth. It's driver's choice. I mean, come on, man. Let's go with, do you want to go down the road here from Kevin Federico?
Sebastian, any big three teams you ever?
Hey, Sebastian, have any of the big three teams offered you a ride? I know you're thankful for Dale Coyne to continue with their support. Just always puzzles me that after the Newman-Haas days, you never picked up from Penske or Ganassi teams. I mean, I know in print, Mike Hull has said that you are definitely someone of interest to them. I think any smart team, you know, I've heard you've done okay in the past in IndyCar. It might be a reason for some to consider.
Yeah, I mean, there's been talks and negotiations, but timing would never kind of aligned. And you know, I've been lucky. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, it's been with smaller teams, but you know, I very much cherish those moments. And yeah, they could have been something, but you know, with could have beens and should have beens, you know, you can go on forever. So there was interest and talks, but you know, sometimes timing just is not right, and it's just the way it is.
And with this announcement, at least public announcement today, of this multi-year extension between James, Sully Sullivan, Jimmy Vassar, and Dale Coyne, we know at least for sure where you're going to be driving for the next 2 years. You've been someone who, I think depending on the situation, contract length has been something you've always been very specific about. What are your thoughts on knowing at least you're going to have a specific car you'll be driving through 2020? Does that give you comfort? Does that give you the sense that, hey, okay, I know we have more time to try and develop ourselves into a big three team?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I don't feel like we will develop towards being a big three, you know, or whatever. But at the end of the day, I think it just, you know, splits the load a little bit and the financial responsibilities of that program. And it's a really good thing. Obviously, Dell's been, you know, just super committed to this and taking all of it until, you know, the first deal last year came to fruition. And, yeah, I think obviously being able to have more of a marketing com team with James and Sully, is definitely something that will help us hopefully to have more means and do more things and expand a little bit. And, yeah, just optimize everything we have and everything we could do in the future.
Let's go to our pal Jerry Siddeth, who asks, Sebastian, what are your favorite aspects of the current IndyCar? He doesn't say chassis or series, but current IndyCar and any things you might improve. And similarly, what are your favorite aspects of the Ford GT that you're driving this weekend?
Well, I mean, I just really like, you know, the competition in IndyCar. I think, obviously, to be able to have a series which is so, so close and you know, just the gaps between the top 10 is ridiculous most of the time, and that puts on great racing and close racing, and I think it's you know, the interaction with the fans, the car itself is fun to drive, so there's really not much I would change, to be honest, at all. I think, you know, we all have the sights, you know, and the series has been, you know, relaying that message that obviously there's a big wish and push to try and get a third manufacturer involved, and I think, you know, Honda is definitely on board with that. When the new engine formula is going to come out, the cars are going to get really exciting because we're going to get more power. So if anything, you know, that's the thing that I would have wanted to see, and it's coming.
Both Chevy and Honda, yeah, they've been very vocal for the past many years saying, tell us what we need to do. Tell us how we can help to get a third one in, because it also helps them, right? Should bring down costs a little bit, not having to supply so much of the paddock.
Yeah, and you don't want to be, as a series anyways, vulnerable at, you know, losing one and just being in at risk. So I think, you know, it's just much more of a balanced equation, and you know, it seems like the interest is rising. So you know, pretty excited for the outlook.
And I don't want to give too much away, but on the topic of a third manufacturer, there may or may not be some conversations taking place this weekend in this very paddock about such of a thing. So, yeah, who knows?
Who knows? No, I think, you know, there are a lot of really good things, and, you know, definitely seeing you know, strong messages and positive messages in the IndyCar paddock, and so it is in IMSA. So, I mean, the only thing I would say that I'm not really a big fan of, but I think it varies from point of views, and I think the fans really like it. You know, it's BOP because that's what we end up talking about a lot, that famous balance of performance. You know, it sounds and feels very artificial from the driver's perspective, but obviously it puts on a really good show for the fans. So, you know, I guess you never have an ideal situation, but that's the only thing that, you know, as a driver, I'm not a big fan of, but I do understand where they're coming from.
And we're thankful we don't have it in any car.
Yeah, so. No, but then that's the thing. Like, unfortunately, these days there are two avenues. You have one avenue without BOP, but it's spec racing for the most part, or, you know, just a lot of manufacturers, different cars, different everything, and then you end up with a balance of performance. So pick your fight.
Got some questions here on Twitter. This one from Michael Goodyear might be of interest, if you can read that one and answer that one.
So I'd be grateful if I would be willing to talk about when I competed in the IROC series and its penultimate season in 05, and more specifically winning at Texas.
I don't remember this. I'm blanking out. Is this a career moment that I need to go check on YouTube?
It's definitely worth a look. It was quite a moment. I think it had been a few years that any open wheel drivers had won one of those, and you know, to be quite honest, actually Kurt Busch should have won that thing by a mile. He was checked out, and then sure enough, blew a right front. Broke another couple of ribs after breaking a couple of ribs, geez. I think, earlier or like a couple of weeks before. And yeah, I was the new kid on the block, you know, at that point. And just really trying to understand what those cars were about, and not, didn't know anything about Texas. Came the first time, tested a little bit, felt actually really good, and came back for the race. I got, I think, a good draw on the grid, and was running second or something. And then when Kurt had his tire blow up, then I took the lead, and it was interesting because Mark Martin was charging through and literally in my bumper for the last all of the race, pretty much. And yeah, but thankfully it was probably the best one to have, you know, behind me, because he was fair and never bumped me out. And there was a bit of tire management because the car was pretty abusive on the right front, and he tried to push me to use that potential up, and then I found a way to kind of slow him down in the middle without getting giving him a run, and we ended up with a win. So that was pretty special. I remember Max Pappas jumping on the top of the car, and it was up there for sure. It was fun times.
Pappas was excitable. I've never heard about that before from that mellow fellow. Let's see. I think folks are asking you some honest things because they know you're an honest guy. This one here from Donald Gowron. I know that your season with Dragon, or your time with Dragon Racing, and then having to split car with Catherine Legg, maybe wasn't your most favorite time. Donald mentions hearing during the Meyer Shank Racing podcast I did recently with all the women in the number 57 Acura when you walked by when we were recording in the driver's room there. Donald just wondering if you and Catherine are okay from a relationship standpoint. Any tension there?
I mean, there's no particular relationship. I mean, I respect Catherine. Obviously, she's had a lot of successes since that time. It was a bit of a tough situation. Obviously, with Dragon having to downsize to one car and everything. I think none of us obviously wanted to share the car.
Well, there's no serious race car drivers say, "Oh yeah, please take me out of the car half the time."
Yeah, and then you know there were financial consequences for both of us. For me, for sure. When you don't race, you don't get paid. So it was not happy days. But she's done quite a fine job since, and gotten herself a lot of opportunities. So no, I just have no issues at all.
She flipped you off, by the way, when you're walking by during the podcast.
I'm sure.
Or maybe that was me. I'm misremembering here a little bit. Let's go to our friend Steve Hamilton on Twitter, who asks, "What does Dale Coyne Racing need to compete for the championship?" Please don't say better dampers. That would make me
that
sad.
That must be Olivier's friend or something. If we knew,
better driver, we think.
Probably, but you know, if we knew, obviously, we'd get it done right away.
He could be talking about Santino too. I mean, you know, it's 50-50. Okay, maybe not. But you're the guest.
At the end of the day, I think you can never point it to one thing. It's just a lot of little things that add on, and just try and get a better pit stops every time, trying the driver to clean up his game and make less mistakes, trying to optimize, grip. So obviously that goes platform, dampers, everything, trying to get a better understanding on the aero. There is not a single one thing, and that's why racing is so complex. And sometimes you think you have all the elements to be successful, and you don't. It's because, everything has to work together, and, it's not an easy task, otherwise everybody would do it.
Consistency is probably the number one thing, Steve, and that's not specific to Dale Coyne Racing. Consistency, and not just being consistent, but consistent quality finishes. Doesn't always have to be a win or a podium, but if you're looking at what makes certain teams perennial contenders, it's that at the end of the year, barring those couple of crashes or some of the oddities that might have happened, pick the number 75%, 80%, there's a pretty strong finishing position across the whole season that gives them the points to be able to vie for a championship. And a lot of that is often about money and funding. right?
If you're resources in general, obviously, you know, if you have a few more people, I think, you know, it was particularly true last year with the new car and being able to react from one race to another and project yourself and make adjustments and stuff. Like we were almost operating on the, you know, one weekend to another, you know, basis. You could never get enough people in time, you know, for Craig and Olivier to kind of look up and be like, okay, take a step back, see where we're at. You know, it was like go, always like from one event to the next. So that really hurts. And if you have more people, that, you know, that definitely plays its role.
Jake Wilson, very important question here. How often do both of you eat McDonald's? Well, first of all, looking at you, Mr. 0% body fat, I would assume the number is zero, but do you ever pull through the old Mickey D's drive-thru?
Sure. I mean, I, you know.
What's your go-to thing?
I'm a Big Mac guy.
You are?
Yeah. Yeah, always been.
Anything extra? You ask it anything special on it?
No. No onions, no pickles. That's it.
No. Okay. I get the no pickles part. No onions. Okay. What about fries, drinks? You just supersize everything?
No, I don't supersize everything, but I mean, especially when you're, you know, spending a lot of time traveling and stuff, sometimes it's just convenient. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, probably.
Wow.
It's not, you know, I sometimes do stop at fast food. It's just the way it is.
All right. Well, Jake, this is probably going to be the grand revelation of this podcast. I might go to McDonald's twice a year at most, maybe once. Obviously, I used to go to it a lot, as my body size also suggests. But believe it or not, I'm not a big fast food guy. Really not. So I have made that change. Didn't make that change maybe about a year or two ago of I'm going to bring in a proper sandwich or something. If I'm coming into the track, I'll stop and actually get dinner from a real place, not something that involves pulling my car through and honking the horn.
If you bring the meat, you got it. It's like Obelix. You put like a beef and then the pork and everything. It gets cleaned up.
There we go.
No, I'm joking.
Wait a minute.
Not even close.
Okay. I guess, again, how funny. You are a consumer of McDonald's and I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go very frequently, but yeah, I mean, through airport runs and stuff.
Have you ever had a Shamrock Shake? No? Okay. You gotta add that to you gotta add that to your list. All right, where should we go? Jonathan Irlon, I love this on Facebook. Always good to hear. My favorite show will be on the Hamburger and French Fry Show. So sorry this isn't IndyCar related. Seb, what do you think it would be like to take your factory Peugeot 908 HDI FAP, this LMP1 twin turbo diesel V12, around Daytona? And in general, what was it like to drive that car? And I'll just add, you realize all the champ cars you've driven, whatever else, folks always come back to that Peugeot 908.
That is a sweet car. I'll give you that. Depending on the temperature, we talked about it at Portland, and it makes some serious power when the intercooler and the P2 temperature was low. So it was a very entertaining car and great battles.
I just think of something.
But driving that thing around here, it would be moving, that's for sure.
That much power and speed, but with a car has a lot of mass as well. I mean, great aero and everything.
No, not so much. I mean, it was a 900 kilo car, so.
I'm just thinking comparison to your IndyCar and such, just something that.
Yeah, I mean, an IndyCar around this place would, like on the road course, it'd be seriously fast. I can't remember what the DPI to IndyCar usual kind of gap is, but it's probably 5 seconds or so at least. It'd be interesting.
Who do we need to call at Peugeot Sport to wheel one out so we can properly answer this question?
That's a good question. Bruno Famin is still in charge, so maybe we could do an historic reunion or something. We're gonna have to think about this one now. Now that we put the bug in somebody's ear.
I love Bruno. He's the man, Bruno. We need to make this happen, buddy. This is a really good idea. Let's see. You know, this is a little bit of a longer question and or comment, but I love stuff like this that really does help remind us of the gestures and the time taken by folks like yourself and other drivers, how much it can mean. Said last season, my 7-year-old son and I went to the Portland race. It was first time at an IndyCar race, and my first time since Portland more than a decade ago. We had a great time in the months leading up to the race. My son and I would watch the hamburger and french fry show, and he loved it, getting psyched up for Portland. Thanks, guys, and for bacon. I guess that's our boy Miller. And he says, for you, Seb, I want to thank you again for the race last season. Portland, you had an awesome comeback, and my son had a great time rooting for you during the race and was over the moon afterwards. When he met you, and you took time to go into your hauler and get him some hamburger and french fry show stickers. Merci. How cool. Again, man, I mean, yeah. We just kind of do this stuff and hope people don't throw rocks
potatoes.
Or stones or, yeah. It's just, again, man, it's, I know you've
that
done
was
this
the feel
forever.
Good moment of the session.
It's pretty awesome. It's all downhill from here, by the way. It's going to be nothing but complaints. Pruitt, you're the worst ever. Please retire. Let's see. Here we go. Carlos Amaya, why don't you take that question?
Hey, Seb, any chances of a NASCAR switch in the future? You have a good friend in Mark Martin there. Oh, well, man, that could have been something. But obviously, I think, you know, we've touched base on that. He's actually a pretty good follower. I don't think the time is very good for an open wheel guy to try and switch to NASCAR. There've been quite a few not so successful stories. And it's such a tough world. I think if I had not been pursuing F1 aspirations, after that first IROC experience, winning, in 05, one race, and Mark Martin being extremely complimentary and supportive. I think I might have been able to find something, but back in those days, it really wasn't something I was considering. It's a life change. Obviously, you need to live, breathe, sleep NASCAR, and yeah, it's not. I don't think I would, first of all, get an opportunity these days, and second, it's just too late now.
It's too late. You know, I gotta
old
admit
fart,
too.
Man. Oh, I'm turning 40 years old. They're not gonna sign a 40 years old.
So folks can't see this. Hopefully they will tomorrow when we film a hamburger and french fry episode. You notice my beard's a little darker? My wife got tired of my all-white beard, yet my hair has yet to really change color. So she
trying
decided
to balance,
dyed my beard a little bit. And so the funny part, and it was a tense couple of days in the Pruitt household. So the product she used, which we won't mention it because it was hot garbage, for the first couple of days, I kind of looked like my 90-year-old grandmother. It had this blue tint to it. And so she, she's taking photos of the whole thing while I'm just got there, my eyes closed, whatever. And I go and look in the mirror, and I look like Papa Smurf. I mean, it was not good. So I apologize. I'm trying to explain visuals here on a radio format. But, yeah, you'll see it tomorrow.
It's okay. It's not Smurf-like anymore.
Well,
so.
I'm telling you, had we waited, it's faded a bit, but there were some tense moments about what am I going to do? Am I going to have to shave my face?
Oh, that would have been awesome.
No, it wouldn't. You would have had to have looked at it. It would not have been awesome. All right, brother. This question here from Eric on Twitter, I like because it's from Eric the Gamer. Tell us about this from your perspective, Seb. Eric says, would love to hear Seb dive into what he and the team are aiming for in the 2019 season. We've seen the last 2 years wins can happen. And as a fan, I'd love to see multiple wins and maybe a championship run. If that's not realistic, I'd love to hear what's missing to make that point. And what I love about this is there are some drivers and teams you can ask this question to, and they will have specific answers. Okay, last year we analyzed this. We need to improve this area. Like, these are the core things we are aiming at. And then there are other teams that say, yeah, we've done this. Okay, we've done this for many years. We're obviously going to try and get better, but we're not going to say these two or three things we've highlighted, and if we do those, everything comes good. It's another racing season. We give it our all and see where we end up. Where do you and where does the coin team fall in that mindset?
I'm not one to set, like, expectations and goals like that. I think, you know, racing can be extremely unforgiving and very hard sometimes. So, you know, it's absolutely unnecessary pressure. I think it's a given in our organization, at least, that everybody's just giving 100%. And I really don't feel like it would be fair to just set in stone, like, we're going to do this. You know, I just trust everybody to do the best they can, and hopefully that will buy us more runs at winning races than in the past 2 years. But you know, all you can do is give your very best, and I'm a true advocate of that. I think you know, just I know the team's been working really hard in the off season, trying to improve everything they could, and you know, I know personally I. Yeah, I've touched base with you on that before, but I mean, you know, I do need to accept that sometimes we don't have the car to try and finish on the podium, or even sometimes on the top five, and that's the days that you just gotta take the pill and you know, bring the points home and move on and not expose yourself, make mistakes. So I think it's everybody needs to, you know, give their very best, and hopefully we'll have a good championship run this year.
Another thing, too, to mention, and I'm sure many of our listeners know this, but your engineer, Craig Hampson, and Olivier Boisson, and everybody at your coin team, everybody at every team, during the off season, they aren't just showing up Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, cleaning up the office a little bit, emptying the trashes. It's looking through all possible data to find things that they might cue off of to find an improvement. It's just brainstorming, right? Because creativity is a big part of this too. Yes, yeah. You gave feedback A, the car gave us data B, and we compiled it. Okay, great. But there's also just this, there's a bit of mad scientist as well.
Yeah, you need to be able to bounce ideas off of each other. And that's where, you know, having more people kind of sometimes helps, you know, trying to do that. But, you know, we're pretty happy where we're at. And I think we'll have more success in the future for sure.
Got two more questions here we'll go to on Twitter and then jump back to Facebook. All right, Seb. Are you prepared? This comes in from June Spencer, a three-peat at St. Pete. Haven't heard much about the car. Asks if it's quick. I know that you and the team were testing at Sebring just here a little while ago. Your engineer may or may not have sent me a photo of the slight reconfiguration of a corner or two with some cones to try and test some particular things they're working on. So what do you think? I mean, can we count on Rossi taking out someone again in front of you, or you just lead from the pole? What do you think?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think we've definitely spent quite a bit of time trying to up the pace a bit on street courses. It's been a bit of a weakness. You know, if you take kind of Long Beach out of the equation, we're not particularly strong at St. Pete. We had really good tire wear and really good average pace. But we're lacking optimal pace. We're really not that stellar at Toronto. There's a few places where, you know, we really felt like we're struggling, and I struggled with the car in general on the street course. So we've definitely spent quite a bit of time, effort, to try and fix that. So that Sebring test was one of them, trying to slow things down at Sebring, trying to recreate a bit more the harder braking, a bit more of a slow corners type street course,
not giving you the free corner exit to just open the thing up, which obviously influences your corner entry, because you know, you've got plenty of room to play in the edge,
trying to tighten the radiuses. You know,
it's really smart.
So I think we got a bunch of good information. We tried a lot of things, trying to understand the car better, and then hopefully we can draw the right conclusions and come up with something that works out good in the season.
Is Claire already planning for the three-peat party?
I'll
keep my Sunday evening free there.
I'm a very realistic person, so unfortunately I think the probabilities are against us, but it doesn't change anything. We'll try as hard as any other tracks to win it, and it's just a great event for me. You know, there's a big push, you know, now from the community around, and I'd be ecstatic if we could be on top of that podium again.
There's another cool thing too that you do there that maybe some folks know about that you're a part of, and that's a pretty cool charity event as well. Just what, 2 days before?
The Wednesday night. I mean, it's a year-round pretty much process because you try and get everybody back on board, but we got really good sponsors, and, you know, the IndyCar community is responding really well to it as well, between the drivers donating items and, you know, IndyCar and Firestone. And so it's just a really cool event. It's on Wednesday night. It's called Kart for Kids. All the funds are helping, you know, kids in tough spots and families.
And it supports a local hospital.
Yeah, it's for kids. It's for Old Children's Hospital in St. Pete, Johns Hopkins. Last year we raised $130,000. We're going to try and beat that. So obviously the big help was to, thanks to Kim and Kevin, you know, the promoters of St. Pete, bringing the event at the track. That was pretty cool.
Kim Green, Kevin Savory.
Yeah, so that worked out. And, we're just going to try and keep growing this thing and help people out.
Well, we're staring at an item right here. I'm going to get signed, and we're going to make sure that we include that. We won't say what it is, but if we can get all the signatures we want on it, it'll raise a little something. But, all right, we're going to think about getting more stuff for you to auction off there. Got a question here on Facebook. Let's go back to Twitter real quick. I apologize. You have one for you in your native tongue.
So what's my favorite track in IndyCar and IMSA?
Comes in from Noel Jack.
I mean, IMSA, really, Le Mans is obviously going to always hold a very special place in my heart. Big fan.
You've been there before.
Yeah, a few times. But really, it's tough. I mean, those classics, you know, between Daytona, Sebring, and even Petit, I'd say I would have a tough time picking one. I mean, Sebring's always been like the one for me, the technicality of the track, the challenge of it in general. When winning it with Action Express a few years back, in quite some style, leading by a lap, that was pretty special. There's just a lot of different things that it's tough for me to pick one. And then in the IndyCar, it'd be Road America for sure.
That's everybody's heart. Wisconsin heart. Let's go to Facebook. This comes in from our pal Gabe Argenta. And Gabe asks this of me. I'll probably actually ask you to help fill in some thoughts on this, Seb. So although the technical bulletins came out a little while ago, IndyCar, in their effort to, I don't know if I should just say, improve super speedway races, but also give teams and drivers more aero tuning tools, knowing that last year maybe didn't have everything you wanted to get to a place of happiness and among all drivers. We've seen the addition of a couple of extra gurney flaps that you can use at the rear. We have the gurneys that are added to the front. They've notched the end of the front wing. Super speedway wings where it would normally connect right with the end plates. The end plates themselves, race engineers have never accused the Universal Aero Kit super speedway end plates as maybe being the finest design on the car. We had a case where just the air was simply stalling, and so by adding in these notches, they found that it's decreased that and also moved the stall back a bit. What are your general thoughts on the super speedway aero tuning tools, or additions, I should say, and any of the downforce possibilities we'd have that are new?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. I haven't tried it. I think obviously being able to add some downforce to the car at Indy compared to where we're at last year is going to be quite critical. You know, I think pinpointing obviously where we're at, the wash has been worse, I think, since we removed it. It's funny because, all right, you got to backtrack a little bit. So what made the car really, really difficult to follow with the added-on pieces on top of the bumper for straight and road courses?
The old manufacturer.
Once you got all those elements on top of it out, meaning the super speedway configuration, the car was actually really efficient, and the air behind the car would be a lot less turbulent than having just the rear wheels exposed. And so when that went away, you know, we really made the air far more dirty. And
hey, the car is so beautiful without them. Can't argue. But
unfortunately, you know, we improved most of the racing by a lot. And then we've hurt a little bit the super speedway. And so the wash is worse. The loss of downforce is bigger when you're following someone. And that's really what we've witnessed and experienced at both, you know, Texas, Pocono, and Indy. All of those three are different downforce levels. Like Indy being in the middle, Pocono being the highest, Texas being the lowest by quite a bit. So, you know, for Indy, being able to add weakers, which we couldn't last year, should be able to allow us to respond, if just for that, to ambient. Because we obviously had some issues where last year was, if not the hottest Indy 500 in history, very close to it. And so, you know, you lose downforce and then that becomes a big problem. And we were completely stuck. Everybody was max downforce and it was clearly not enough. So,
and
you know, we'll see where that takes us. But I think, you know, there's a new right front tire that Firestone's brought for Indy, which seems to have received, you know, on praise and only praises. So it's I think we'll put on a better show for sure, and it gives us a bit of flexibility to, you know, pick your battle, whether you want ultimate speed on your own or if you want to make something a little bit more compromised or if you just want to put on plain straight more downforce and be draggy.
And the big thing, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but the big thing that I just recall hearing so much about last year, especially or in particular at Indy, was with the rules. You could essentially do what you wanted angle-wise with the front wing, but the restrictions were so strong at the rear that, sure, you could have dialed in a ton of front wing, but you did not have the range at back to balance that to your
You basically couldn't add downforce. Like, you could stall the front wing and just put a bunch of angle, but first of all, it really wasn't past a certain amount of degrees. It really wasn't doing anything. Hence, the wakers, because those obviously kind of, you know, keep working their extensions as well now between the nose and the main plane. So it's going to just allow us to keep the aero balance and add total downforce to the car.
And that's the great gift here. So for those who are concerned, hey, downforce, that pack racing is coming back.
No.
Right. No, what this
Absolutely
is actually allowing, in theory, to create more happiness, maybe a little bit more speed, but this is just giving you the tools to be able to refine
you
the
probably,
car's
I haven't seen the numbers, but you're probably talking maximum 200 pounds of downforce, which is really not that very much. Something you can easily lose, you know, between a 90-degree day and a 70-degree day, which is essentially what I think they were shooting for.
Well, let's grab a couple more here, and then I know y'all have sent in some ones for me specifically, and I'll probably just roll those over into next week's show. How about Matthew Ponto, who asks, what's the best Paul Newman story you have?
Oh, man, there are a lot of stories, it's tough to pick one. And plus to be very honest, I there are a lot of very personal moments with Paul and not particularly moments that, you know, I feel like I should be sharing or I would like to share. We'll just leave it at that. It was just, I was just blessed, you know, and so was my family to be around him for the time we've been around him. And just feel very fortunate. And I was really, really very, very touched and sad when obviously he passed the way he passed, and it was not the way we wanted him to go for sure.
Where shall we go here, my friend, to grab a final question or two? Here you go. Danny Kruger. Hey, Seb, what are your weirdest fan moments? Like, we named our racing sled dog after you. Really, FYI, he's won some races, fittingly. So I don't know if it's Sebastian or Bordeaux, but that's a beautiful-looking dog you got there.
Weirdest fan moments. I don't know if it's the weirdest, I think the hardest core fan that I have is called Aya. She's from Japan, and she actually comes from Japan and stays from morning until we leave the racetrack every day at both Long Beach and Toronto.
Wow.
And that's just like, that's dedication right there. And, you know, just, I can't believe that she, I mean, and she spends her own money, you know, obviously traveling just for that. And it's quite a testament, I guess, to the support she gives me.
We're going to close with a question here from our pal, Jamine Tuttle, who, this is awesome, and that's why I love my listeners. That's why I love IndyCar fans. Seb, we've heard it mentioned multiple times over the years on this podcast how, quote, honest you are about your race car setup and practice and testing and whatnot. Do you have any good stories where an engineer had enough and told you to stuff it or something like that, right? Our boy, Mr. Hampson, is, you know, he's very straightforward in saying, you know, Sev drives a hard bargain, man, but it's not just to be a pain. It's because he wants perfection.
We've had our moments with Craig, that's for
sure. Give us a Hampson story or two where you could see that he was reaching his limit or not, but
I think the biggest blow up moment we've had was Denver 2003.
Ooh, what'd you do?
I don't know. I can't even remember the specifics, but it kind of came down those lines where he was really frustrated at me because I really struggled really badly on the braking at Denver that first year. And it kind of came down to the final saying of like, well, how can I say that?
Just say whatever you got.
Well, it kind of ended up being like, well, if, you know, if that's the way you feel, then you drive it.
Nice.
And then he was really not happy with me, that's for sure. Yeah. So I had to suck it up afterwards.
That's really nice. Why are you so mean to him?
Shit, I don't know.
We like him more
than you. I'm just a French bastard, you know?
Okay, well. The French fry to my hamburger. Thank you, brother. Thank you for taking some time here. Love talking IndyCar in the middle of IMSA's big season opener. And then tomorrow we'll find some time to get our first actual race event video up and out. Maybe you can, during a session, you can just pull in real quick. I'll stick the microphone in the car. Yeah, or you can bring the mic around.
Okay.
Whatever.
It's a lot less agitated on the radio than IndyCar can be sometimes, that's for sure.
Just a little bit.
I'm just driving here. I'm the helper.
We're going to get you some McDonald's for your work. Thank you, brother.
Thanks for listening.
And thanks to Cooper Tires and our friends at the Justice Brothers.